Okay, so this is Bio160, and it is November 4th. What's happening today?
Election Day.
Hey, Election Day. Yeah, so.
Did you vote?
Did I vote? I voted a long time ago. Yes, I voted. A long time ago. Absentee, just by mail. Well, you never know when I get, I have a lot of questions in the hallway. Well, I teach until 6 o'clock and started early, so I never know what's going to happen. Sometimes it rains, and who wants to stand outside in the rain? So I voted absentee. All right, so let's see what else. Let's talk about what's going to happen next time, because the schedule is a little bit funny. I do want to give you a quiz on Thursday. All right, so... And in a second, I'm going to have you pass in your quizzes for today, the take-home. And on the schedule, it says you're going to be quizzed on chapters 13 and 14. Well, that's too much. So you're going to have a quiz on chapter 13, which is the cardiovascular system. Even though we're not going to be able to cover the whole thing, I'm going to pull some questions out of the student study guide, so you got plenty of time to prepare for the quiz on all of chapter 13 for Thursday. The whole cardiovascular system. I'll probably focus mostly on the heart because that's what we're going to cover today. But if there's some easy questions on the vascular system, I might include those just to keep us up to date. All right, so let's see. That is Thursday. And then next week, we just have lectures. And then the week after that, we're scheduled for a test. Okay. And there's no class on Thursday. Huh? Oh, wait. No. That's the week before Thanksgiving.
No, there's no class on Thursday.
Okay, so we do have a class on Thursday, 2 weeks from, it's a week after that. All right, so I don't know about that lecture test, if it's going to happen on that day or not. Yep. Hi. We do not have class on Veterans Day, but that's on Monday, so that doesn't affect us in here. Okay, but it will affect your class if you have a class on Monday. Okay, and when is Veterans Day? Is it this coming Monday?
Yes.
All right. Okay, that's good. I think the weather's going to be nice, too. Veterans Day is on Tuesday?
But okay.
But I think they make it a long weekend for us. Okay. Yeah, it's always a long weekend. All right, so that's the schedule. So we're done with the blood chapter, but are we completely done with blood? No, because why?
The questions.
We want to go over the questions. And since I have the tape recorder going, let's go over some of the questions. Okay. All right. And when I'm done with my sheet, I would give this to somebody. But not before we do the questions, unfortunately, because I need to read the questions. I don't have the cardiovascular handout. If you need a cardiovascular handout, you can see me after class. And I'll make sure that you have one. Okay? All right, question number one. What kind of tissue is blood?
Connective tissue.
What are the two major divisions or compartments of blood?
Plasma,
which is the fluid part, and formed elements, that's the more solid part. That's the cellular part. So formed elements is just a fancy name for cells. What component of blood contains clotting factors? It is the plasma or the formed elements? You know, I would say plasma, clotting factors, like calcium. What is a major component of plasma? What makes up most of plasma?
Water,
just plain old water, yep. All right, so what are formed elements? Generally speaking, they are cells. All right, what's another name for a red blood cell?
Erythrocyte.
What's another name for a white blood cell?
Leukocyte.
Another name for a platelet?
Thrombocyte.
Yeah, and those make up formed elements. Now, these are not all very typical cells. The red blood cells are highly atypical. Why are they atypical?
No nucleus.
Why is a thrombocyte atypical? Because it's just really a cell fragment. It's just a tiny piece of a cell. It doesn't have a nucleus either. But it still has a cell membrane, so we consider them cells. But that's probably why we call them formed elements, right? What are the functions of red blood cells? Primarily, they carry oxygen through the body. They transport oxygen everywhere. What about white blood cell? fight infections, part of your immune response. And platelets? Coagulation or prevent blood loss. Did we go over the term, the one word term for preventing blood loss? We call that hemostasis. I'm not sure I mentioned hemostasis, but the job of platelets is coagulation or hemostasis, preventing blood loss. All right, number four, what molecule is responsible for transporting oxygen in the blood? Hemoglobin. Where is it located? Inside red blood cells? Yeah? Okay, now I got to look at the next question here. Got to get my flyer apart. What are the breakdown products of hemoglobin? If you break hemoglobin down, what do you get? You get globin and heme. And globin is a protein. And heme is a funny kind of organic molecule. It's not a protein, not a lipid, not a carbohydrate. And so it has to be broken down as well. What are the breakdown products of heme?
Iron
and bilirubin or biliverdin? Yeah, well, it's first biliverdin that gets converted into bilirubin. So I meant either one of those would be good answers for that question. So heme gets broken down into iron and bilirubin, or you could say iron and biliverdin. And next question, what are the breakdown products of globin? It's just a protein. So what are the building blocks of a protein? Amino acids. So when you take a protein and break it down, you get amino acids out of it. And then your body can use those amino acids to make any other protein that it needs to make. Okay, what chemical produces jaundice?
Bilirubin.
Yeah, and that comes from the breakdown of? Biliverdin. That comes from the breakdown of? Heme. Yeah, so that's really what I was kind of thinking of. The breakdown product of heme. And when does your body produce a lot of heme? When what is being broken down? What molecule is being broken down that releases a lot of heme? It's called hemoglobin, right? You all knew that. I don't know why you didn't want to say. Okay. When you break down hemoglobin, you get heme. I just said it the other way around. All right. And when does your body release a lot of hemoglobin? When something else is being broken down. When does your body release a lot of hemoglobin? When red blood cells break apart, or when they get old or die, or something attacks them that produces a lot of hemoglobin, then it gets broken down to heme. The heme gets broken down into bilirubin, which is that pigment. Okay. Number six, how many red blood cells must the body produce every second? Every second, how many does your body need to make? Is it a lot or a little? It's a lot. All right, so pick a number that's incomprehensible and make it even bigger. 2.5 million red blood cells every second. All right, where are red blood cells produced? In red bone marrow. Name two vitamins and the mineral needed to make functional red blood cells with hemoglobin. What are the two vitamins? B12 is one. And riboflavin is another. B12 has another name. It's called cobalamin. Cobalamin, that's vitamin B12. That requires a little cobalt metal ion in it in order to function. But the mineral that is necessary to make hemoglobin is what? What other mineral is necessary?
Iron.
Yeah, it needs iron. So in order to make heme, you need iron to make a functional hemoglobin molecule. What is the measure of how many, put a many in there, how many red blood cells make up whole blood? The hematocrit, that's right. And how do you calculate it? What do you have to start with? You got to start with whole blood that has everything in it, and then you let it settle out and all the red blood cells settle to the bottom, and then you just look at how many red blood cells are on the bottom compared to the whole volume in a test tube or something like that. Okay, and so it just is a percentage. Name the hormone which stimulates red blood cell production. Yeah, it's a funny sounding name, erythropoietin, that stimulates red blood cells. And what organ secretes it? It's kidney? Yeah, primarily the kidneys. The liver does a little bit. I had to think just a second. Yeah, it's the kidneys. Okay, but the liver does a little bit. So erythropoietin stimulates red blood cells. We didn't cover this, but there's another hormone that stimulates the production of thrombocytes. What's a thrombocyte again? A platelet. What's the name of the hormone that stimulates platelet production? Yeah. The hormone that stimulates red blood cell production is erythropoietin, because erythro means what? Red blood cell. Erythropoietin, it stimulates red blood cells. So the hormone that stimulates thrombocytes is thrombopoietin. You don't have to write that down, but it should make sense to you. Thrombopoietin. All right. What are the functions of white blood cells? Fight infection. Name the types of white blood cells. We got neutrophils is one. Neutrophil is the most common. What's another one? Monocytes. Those phagocytized particles that are in your body that don't belong. They're crawling around all over your body. Monocyte, they're good for you. The three, lymphocytes. They make antibodies and fight infections too. And then there's two more that I said don't worry too much about their function. They're basophils and eosinophils. Okay, they have to do with inflammatory response. So those are the types. Five types of white blood cells. So make sure you can recognize those as leukocytes if you see a name for those. What is another name for blood clotting? Ah, that's a really important question. Another name for blood clotting is coagulation. What are the three steps? Ooh, the three steps in forming a blood clot. Let's see if I can remember. What's the first step? I think I got it. The first step, somebody should tell me. It's in your notes. I think it's prothrombin activator formation. I don't write that down because I don't know if I'm right. It is? Okay. That's the first one. You should know where this is in your notes, yeah, so you can check real quick. Prothrombin activator formation, step one. And then step two. If you make prothrombin activator, what is prothrombin activator going to do? It's going to activate prothrombin. All right, so when prothrombin gets activated, what does it become? Okay. What does the pro mean in front of prothrombin? That means it's active or inactive?
Inactive.
Right, so if you take prothrombin activator and let it work, it's going to take prothrombin and convert it into?
Thrombin.
Yeah, so that's the second step, is thrombin formation. Am I right? I don't know if I'd write that down without checking. Okay, thrombin formation. All right, and thrombin is an enzyme. What does it do? It's going to do the third step in coagulation. It's going to convert fibrinogen, which is inactive, into fibrin, which is the active substance that forms a blood clot. So fibrin formation is the third step. Okay. I lost my step. What are the three steps? Got that. Okay, part two to number eight. Name the molecule which forms a network of protein fibers which traps blood cells, fluid, and platelets. What's the molecule that does that? The molecule that makes that net. What's the name of that molecule? That's called fibrin, which is what? The very last step in coagulation. Okay, is fibrin formation. And number nine, what prefix is added to the name of a chemical to designate it as inactive or a precursor? What prefix?
Pro.
What suffix is added to the name of a chemical to designate it as a precursor or inactive? Ogen. Right? Be able to say if a molecule is active or inactive when given its name. So I'm going to try if pull out a name you haven't heard before and put it on the test, and then you have to pick it out of a list and tell me if it's active or inactive. So what are you going to look for?
Pro
or? O-G-E-N at the end, right? Okay, and you can say, oh yeah, I know that, even though I haven't heard of it. What converts prothrombin to thrombin? What converts prothrombin to thrombin? That's the first step of coagulation. What's the first step? Is prothrombin activator formation. So what converts prothrombin to thrombin? That is prothrombin activator. Prothrombin activator activates prothrombin. It's in the name. Prothrombin activator. What converts fibrinogen to fibrin? What converts fibrinogen to fibrin? Or does it go the other way? Does it go to fibrin to fibrinogen? No, it doesn't go that way. It goes fibrinogen to fibrin because fibrinogen is the inactive, the precursor to fibrin. You know that from the suffix. So, and you're right, it's thrombin. Thrombin converts fibrinogen into fibrin. What mineral is necessary for normal blood clotting function? It's released, I believe, even from platelets. It's in your bones.
Calcium.
Right, calcium. What vitamin is necessary for the synthesis of clotting factors in the liver? So this is different than red blood cell production. This is blood clotting factors. You need a vitamin in your diet. And if you don't have this vitamin in your diet, you don't make blood clotting factors, and you'll have decreased blood clotting function. You'll have a tendency to bleed a lot. It's vitamin K. Capital K, but that capital K does not stand for potassium. It's actually a vitamin. It's sort of organic molecule. Anybody remember what the dietary source for vitamin K is? Green leafy vegetables. And what would be your favorite example? Broccoli. Yeah, okay. Okay. What vitamin is necessary? All right, number 11. Ah, guess what? Don't have to talk about 11. Yeah, we talked about it a little bit, but that's okay. The second beyond the test. So number 12. What is the name of the process which produces a transfusion reaction? I'll give you a hint. It's not coagulation. It's something else. Starts with A. Agglutination. Agglutination is what we call a transfusion reaction. All right, so a transfusion reaction is the result of an interaction between what two kinds of molecules? Agglutination, due to an association between an antigen and an antibody. So that's completely different than what? Fibrin formation for coagulation. It's an antibody-antigen reaction. Where are antibodies found in the blood? Where are antibodies found? Antibodies are found?
Plasma.
Plasma, in the fluid part of blood. Where are antigens found?
On the
cell membrane, on the outside surface of the cell membrane. And then the second part of that question is, in the ABO blood group system, how many blood types are possible? Uh-oh. I've got to get my hand out of my pocket. It could be A. It could be B. It could be AB. Or it could be O. Okay, so that's four. But specifically, I'm interested in just the ABO system first. Okay. Okay. How is a person's, put an apostrophe S after that person. How is a person's blood type defined? By the antibodies they have or the antigens they have?
Antigen.
It's by the antigens they have. And where do they have antigens again? On the cell membrane, right? So a person's blood type is determined by the antigens that they possess on the cell membranes of their red blood cells. All right, so know the blood types of the ABO system and what antigens / antibodies are present and where they're located. So, for instance, if somebody has blood type A, what antigens do they have?
A antigen.
Okay, you know what? If they're blood type A, they got the A antigen on the surface of the red blood cells. And what about antibodies?
B.
Then they have the anti-B or the B antibodies. They've got the opposite. Okay, so always just try to remember that the blood type somebody has determines the antigen on the surface of their cells. And then they will, in the plasma, they'll have the opposite antibodies. Okay, name another blood group system.
Rh.
Yeah, I like Rh. That's a good example. How many blood types can it produce? Only two, and that's either positive or negative. And if somebody is Rh positive, what can you tell me about their red blood cells? What's sticking off of the red blood cells?
Antigen.
It's that antigen, the Rh antigen. And if they don't have an Rh antigen on their red blood cells, then they are Rh negative. Right. Okay. And then here's that little scheme for controlling hemopoiesis. Hemopoiesis is red blood cell production. Hemostasis is stopping blood loss. All right, so I'm done with my handout. Anybody need this handout? No. Okay. All right, so, I didn't collect the quizzes. So why don't you pass your quizzes all the way over to the right-hand side and then pass them down to the front, and then I'll pick them up. And then that's going to take us through the cardiovascular system. Yeah, I didn't know all those things were free today on the way to work. Well, you know, I put it there. But I put it there because it's falling off my shirt.
So put it on and then go to Starbucks.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Jerry's.
Yeah. Well, see, if I had known that Ben & Jerry's was free and Krispy Kreme and Starbucks was all free today, I probably never would have showed up to work. I just would have been driving around L.A. all day eating donuts and ice cream. I'm just kidding. If you voted, you can go to those places supposedly and get free stuff. Okay, and I forgot to mention to put your name on the paper, so hopefully you did that. All right, so cardiovascular system. This is kind of a fun chapter because we are familiar with the heart. We're familiar with some of the pathologies of the heart. There's a condition in blood pressure that goes haywire in a lot of people. It produces high blood pressure. What is high blood pressure called? It's very common. It's called hypertension. So we're going to learn about all these different kinds of things in the heart. So let's start by just talking about the heart for a second. And the heart, I think, is kind of interesting because when we've been looking at the body so far, all right, we saw that there was a humerus, a bone, in your upper appendage on the right side of your body, and what did you have on the left side of your body? The same thing, right? Like the mirror image of it, right? And if you have five fingers on one side of your body on your right hand, what do you have on your left hand?
Five.
Yeah, typically you have five fingers over there too. So you have what we call nice symmetry, bilateral symmetry. What you have on one side of the body, you have on the other side. Okay. So if you have an eye on one side of your face, you got an eye on the other side. Now the heart, what can you tell me about the heart? Is the heart right, you got one, is it right smack in the middle of your body, or is it more on one side than the other?
More on one side.
Yeah, it's more on one side than the body, so it's not perfectly symmetrical inside the body. What side is it mostly on? It's mostly on the left side, that's right. So the heart is mostly on the left side. We'll see that it has some symmetry, but it also has some asymmetry as well. Okay, so when we look at the heart, it's probably best to think of the heart as a triangle. So here's a triangle, like that. And that's pretty much how the heart is sitting in the body, with the wide part of this triangle, or you could think of it as a pyramid, sticking up, and the pointy part sticking down. And so this part right here is what we call the base. even though it's the superior part or the top part. And what do we call this pointy part of a triangle right here? This is what we call the apex. So base and apex. So that's real important to appreciate that in the heart. And then, okay, so we said that that heart is not exactly nice and symmetrical inside your thoracic cavity. All right, as you go from base to apex, so as you go from the top to the bottom of the heart, it is tilted. So the base pretty much is right on midline, but the apex is tilted over to the left. So it's angled to the left. So that's why most of your heart is on the left side of your body, because it's angled. But it's angulated another way as well. As you go from base to apex, it's not only angulated to the left, it's also angulated anteriorly. So we call that a biaxial tilt to the heart. So the part of the heart that is the most anterior, that's closest to your chest wall, is what, the base or the apex? It's the apex because it's the part that's sticking out like that. And when your heart beats, that apex is pounding around inside your chest and actually pounds up against your chest wall. And in some people that are really thin, you can actually see that spot. You can see the apex of the heart, because when a heart contracts, it's actually a fairly violent contraction of muscle. And you can see that little pounding underneath the pectoralis muscle. And if you're ever interested in finding out exactly where somebody's heart is, because not everybody's heart is in exactly the same position if you're going to be doing some kind of scientific study or measuring ECG, you might want to find exactly where their heart is. And how can you do that? You can put your hand on their chest and feel where that point is where the apex is pounding up against the thoracic wall. It's going to be a little bit lower on you. Okay, it's going to be down over here. And that point where the apex pounds up against your chest is called the point of maximal impulse, or PMI. Point of maximal impulse, that's where the apex of the heart is beating up against your chest. Okay. Well, let's talk about some chambers in the heart, and we're going to get back. So I'm just going to draw some stuff on the board, and then I'll show you some nice pictures. So for the purposes of this discussion right here, let's forget about how the heart is tilted inside the thoracic cavity, all right, and just look at the heart. There are some chambers inside the heart. All right, so let me flop that down. There are chambers. Does anybody know how many chambers the heart has? There are four. Yep, there are four chambers. So let's break the heart up into four chambers like that. So we got the triangle, we break up into four. There are two superior chambers, two inferior chambers. And the superior chambers we call atria, that's plural. Each one is an atrium. And when you look at this diagram, you're looking at, for instance, an illustration of what my heart looks like inside my body. All right, so we have a right side and a left side. Which one is which when you look at my heart? Like this one over here is which one? This is my left, because here's my right hand. All right, so this is the left side. This is the right side. All right, oh, we forgot something. We said there are four chambers. These top two are atria. What are the inferior two, or the bottom two? These are ventricles. Right, these are ventricles down over here. So now you can label all of these chambers. This one right here is the right atrium. We just call that RA. Here is the left atrium, LA. And then we got the ventricles. Right ventricle, and then the LV. RV, LV for ventricles. All right, so what the heck does the heart do? What's the job of the heart? It's supposed to pump blood. It pressurizes blood so that blood flows through your circulatory system. So the heart is contracting all the time. Blood is flowing through it. Okay, so let's see how blood is flowing through the heart. So don't forget, here's apex. All right, so these are atria. These are ventricles down over here. There are two kinds of blood vessels. Two major kinds of blood vessels in your body. There are things called arteries, or there are things called veins. And I want you to know the definition. So here we have the left ventricle. It's going to pump blood away from the heart in this direction. There is another kind of major blood vessel right here that is receiving blood from the body. So here blood is going to the heart, here blood is going away from the heart, and now we can define what these two blood vessels are. So something that brings blood to the heart is what we call a vein, and a blood vessel that takes blood away from the heart is what we call an artery. That seems really simple, but some people get really confused with this when we talk about certain circulations inside the body. Okay, so blood is flowing through the heart like this. Okay, so blood flows into the right atrium. The right atrium contracts and pumps blood into the right ventricle. Well, how does it get through this little wall right here? There's a hole. Okay, and in that hole, there is a valve. All right, so we got to learn the valves of the heart. So now you know the chambers. How many chambers are there?
Four.
How many valves are there? Okay, it's going to be really easy to remember. Because how many chambers are there?
Four.
And there are four valves that you have to know. So it's four and four. Okay, so how many chambers?
Four.
How many valves?
Four.
Just say it automatically. Now we got to place them in the right spot. Okay, so here we have a valve on the right side of the heart that we call an atrioventricular valve. Here's an atrioventricular valve because it's between an atrium and a ventricle. And guess what we have on the left side of the heart? We got another atrioventricular valve. So what's the job of these atrioventricular valves, or the valves in the heart anywhere that we find them? Okay. Valves allow blood to go in one direction. So the heart's job is to pump blood in one direction so it flows through your body. So for instance, if blood flows from the left atrium into the left ventricle is going to pump blood into this artery. So when the left ventricle contracts, if blood were to go backwards up into the left atrium, that would eventually kill the heart. That would be fatal. All right, because the heart, have you ever been on a beach or some sand dunes and you had to walk up a big sand dune? What's it like walking up a sand dune? You take a step up and then you get up there, what happens? You slide back down. All right, take another step. You go up and you slide back down. So is it easy or hard to run up a sand dunes? It's really hard because every time you take a step up, you slide back down. So think of your poor heart. If the blood would flow backwards, the heart would have to work so hard, it would just wear out. Okay? It would kill itself. So these valves have to work so that blood flows only in one direction through the heart. Okay. So that's the job of all the valves inside the heart. Prevents backward flow of blood, which is going to kill the heart. Sometimes we call that retrograde. Backward or retrograde is the same. All right, so these valves have names. The valve on the right side of the heart actually has three of these flaps. So we call this the tricuspid. The tricuspid what? Atrioventricular valve. Because it has three flaps. I didn't draw them in. I don't know how to draw the third one because it's coming from over here, but I'll just draw it like that. It has three flaps. This one only over here is a little bit different. It only has two flaps. So we can't call that the tricuspid. We're going to call that the bicuspid. All right, so bicuspid, what? Atrioventricular valve. So sometimes we call that an AV valve because atrioventricular is just too much of a mouthful to say all at one time. AV valve is between an atria and a ventricle. Bicuspid. And so a bicuspid valve just has two flaps that are opening and closing. And, okay, somebody at one time thought that that would be a really good model for a hat. Okay, so they would take these two flaps of fabric or something and make a hat like that and turn it around and stick it on your head like that. What's the name of that hat? The luminaries wear these hats, like the Pope and cardinals and bishops in the Catholic Church. They wear these things on their head. That's called a mitre. is that hat. You wear miters at graduation, but it's just a flat board, not really quite the same thing. Okay, so another name for the bicuspid valve is called the mitral valve. And it comes from the name of that hat, because it just has two flaps to it. All right, so those are both AV valves. How on earth are you going to remember that the tricuspid is on the right side and bicuspid is on the left side? Okay, because how do you read? You read from right to left, right? And so there's a little saying, try before you buy. Okay, so you might get that mixed up, but just say try before you buy, and the tricuspid valve is on the right side of the heart, bicuspid is on the left. Okay, so I'm going to draw in another blood vessel right here, and it's bringing blood to the left atrium. So what kind of blood vessel is that right there? Is that an artery or a vein, and why? It's a vein. Why? It's bringing blood to the heart, right? So it's a vein. Right. All right, and I'm down over here, I'm going to draw another blood vessel. It's not really in that location, but that's where I'm going to draw it. It is taking blood away from the heart, so what kind of vessel is that? Artery, right? So that's another artery right here. Here's an artery. Okay, and there are two more valves. There is a valve between the ventricle and each of these corresponding arteries, and they take this shape as well, like this, so that when the ventricles contract, it pushes blood into the artery, and when the ventricles relax, blood tries to flow backwards, but it gets caught by these flaps, and they slam closed, so blood can't go retrograde from an artery back into the ventricle. So these two valves have names as well, and they're named after these particular arteries. So the major artery leaving the left ventricle is what we call the aorta. And this one over here is going to go to the lungs. So this is called the pulmonary artery. That's the pulmonary artery because it's going to the lungs. Okay, going to the lungs. I'll show you. Then we're going to have to go to an illustration in your book. Okay, so here are these valves. These valves, I said, are named after the arteries. So this valve right here, it's not an atrioventricular valve. This is the pulmonary valve. All right, so pulmonary. And it has kind of a special shape to it. So if this is the orifice of the valve, right, it kind of looks like this, and here's a third part to it. It's got three flaps, and each one of these little flaps right here kind of looks like half of a moon, right, just by their shape. So sometimes we call these semilunar valves, right here and right here. So this is the pulmonary semilunar valve, and this is the aortic semilunar valve right there. Okay, so how many chambers does the heart have? Four. How many valves does the heart have? Four. What's the purpose of the valves? Prevent backward flow of blood or retrograde flow of blood, either from an artery back into the ventricle or from a ventricle back into an atrium. It prevents that retrograde flow, because if there is retrograde flow, then the heart's going to die. That's never a good thing. So those are the chambers. And there is a structure that separates the RV from the LV. This thing right here has got a name. This is a septum, just like you have this tissue that separates your nostrils. That's a septum, that's a nasal septum. This is what? A ventricular septum or interventricular septum. Interventricular septum. And there's another septum in the heart. Guess where that is? Between the atria, because that blood shouldn't mix together either. This is the interatrial septum. So that's a lot about the heart. Okay. So maybe we should look at some illustrations right now. Okay, so what's on your list? We looked at the chambers of the heart so far. Right atrium, right ventricle. Atrium is on top of the ventricles. Left atrium, left ventricle. That's just on the left side of the heart. And then you have the septa between the atria and the septa between the ventricles. And then here are your valves. The tricuspid, what kind of valve is that? That's an atrioventricular valve. Then you have a pulmonary semilunar valve, the bicuspid or mitral atrioventricular valve, and the aortic semilunar valve. And the thing that makes up these valves are what we call leaflets or cusps. Those are those little flaps of skin that open and close that make up the valves. So how many cusps do these different valves have? Tricuspid has, he's got three. The pulmonary semilunar has got three. The bicuspid has two. And the aortic semilunar has three, actually. So these two semilunar valves here and here are very similar, are very, very similar. But the atrioventricular valves are a little bit different because the tricuspid has three leaflets and the bicuspid's only got two. Okay. And also, there's a big difference between the semilunar valves and both atrioventricular valves. We'll see that in a second. Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about some. Well, maybe I'll show you some pictures of the heart. All right. So now you kind of know all this stuff already. Let's look at the overall circulation in the body. So what part of the heart is this right here? So you got the apex, and this part up over here is the base, right? That's the base, so this is the superior part, here's the inferior part. And then what about the chambers? What about this chamber right here? Is this the left side or the right side of the heart? That's the right, and it's the superior chamber, so that's the right atrium. This one down here is the right ventricle, and then here is the left atrium, and then left ventricle. Here is a vessel taking blood away from the heart. So what is that, an artery or a vein? That's an artery. Here is a blood vessel bringing blood back to the heart. That's a vein. Let's see. Oh, here's another blood vessel taking blood away from the heart. That is an artery. And here is a blood vessel bringing blood back to the heart. That's a vein. Right? So we got vein, vein, artery, and artery. But look. These two arteries right here have two different colors in them. What the heck does that signify? That signifies something a little strange. Remember, what's one of the main functions of blood? It's transporting what in your body? Oxygen. That's the molecule necessary to keep those mitochondria working, making ATP. Right? So blood is oxygenated so that you can make ATP. The blue right here signifies that the blood is low in oxygen. You could maybe say deoxygenated, that's okay for this class, but it's very, very low in oxygen and high in a waste product that your body produces, which is carbon dioxide or CO2. So this blue color means low O2, high CO2. CO2 is carbon dioxide. While in this artery right here, it's red because it signifies that it is high in oxygen and low in CO2. So these two arteries are different because they have opposite components. One is high in oxygen, the other is low in oxygen, even though they are both arteries. That's probably something you probably wouldn't realize before taking a class like this. You probably thought that all arteries have what kind of concentration of oxygen? High. But we see that it's not really true. And let's see why that is. Okay. Let's look at the left ventricle right here. This is going to pump blood everywhere in the body except the lungs. So it's going to pump blood through your whole system. So this is what we call the systemic circulation. The left ventricle pumps blood through the whole systemic circulation. And its job is to what? Supply oxygen to your whole body. So what do you think the job of this left ventricle is? Is it a big job or a little job if it's pumping blood to your whole body except your lungs? A big job. It takes a lot of energy, a lot of work to do that. The left ventricle has to be really strong in order to perform that function. All right. So once blood gets into the tissues everywhere in your body, it gives up oxygen to the tissues. So what does the oxygen concentration in the blood, what happens to the oxygen concentration in the blood? Does it stay the same or does it go down? It goes down because it's giving up oxygen to these cells that are going to utilize it. These cells utilize the oxygen, they produce CO2, so the cells give up CO2 to the blood before it goes back to the heart. So that's why this vein right here, and you agree with me that this is a vein? Yeah, because it's taking blood back to the heart. It is carrying deoxygenated blood or blood that's really high in CO2 coming back from the systemic circulation. All right, so what chamber is it coming back to? It is the right atrium. The right atrium. The right atrium pumps blood into the right ventricle past. What's the name of this valve right here? This is the tricuspid. Remember, tri before you buy, because we're on the right side of the heart. All right, tricuspid valve into the right ventricle. Now, the job of the circulation is to bring oxygen to your body, but there's no oxygen in this blood. Where does blood get oxygen from? Okay, by breathing, because when we inhale, we bring oxygen into our lungs. So this blood has to now go to the lungs to pick up oxygen. So the right ventricle pumps blood into the pulmonary artery. So here we have an artery, which is what? Deoxygenated blood, which is kind of atypical. And the pulmonary artery goes to the lungs. What happens to the CO2 in the blood? It leaves. And when we inhale, we bring in oxygen. Oxygen enters. And as blood is coming back from the lungs, you see now it's that red color, which means what? High oxygen, low CO2. So this vessel right here is coming back from the lungs. We call that the pulmonary, what? Pulmonary, is that an artery or a vein? Okay, now why did you say vein? I like that answer. Why did you say vein? Because it's taking blood back to the heart. So here you have a big major vein that is carrying oxygenated blood. And it's a vein, not because of the oxygen that's in it or not in it. It's just because of the direction of the flow of blood. It's flowing back to the heart. Okay. So this circulation right here from the pulmonary artery through the lungs, returning via the pulmonary vein, this is what we call the pulmonary circulation. Pulmonary circulation. So the right side of the heart or the right ventricle only has to pump blood through the lungs, not through your whole body. So it has a less strenuous job compared to the left ventricle. Because what does the left ventricle have to do? Pump blood through your whole body except the lungs. So the left side of the heart has got to be a lot stronger, develop a lot more pressure compared to the right side of the heart. All right, so now you know you got two circulations, a systemic circulation and a pulmonary circulation, and you know something about all these valves. Okay, as a matter of fact, these valves aren't labeled on this diagram right here, but let's go ahead and see if we can figure out where the valves are and what their names are, just for fun. All right, what were the first two valves that we looked at? Were they semilunar or atrioventricular? Atrioventricular. Where do you find an atrioventricular valve? Between the atrium and a ventricle. That's pretty easy. So where do we have an atrium? Here, and here's a ventricle. So look at that valve right there. That is an atrioventricular valve, and in particular, what kind? What's the name? That's the tricuspid. All right, here's the left atrium. Here's the left ventricle. Right here is the the bicuspid atrioventricular valve. What's another name for bicuspid? Mitral valve. And then I see two other valves. Here is the aorta, taking oxygenated blood to the systemic circulation. And here is another valve. Generally speaking, what kind of valve is this? That's a semilunar valve. And then specifically, which semilunar valve is it? That is the aortic semilunar valve because it's going to the aorta. Here is the artery that's taking blood to the lungs. What's the name of this artery? Pulmonary artery. So what's the name of that valve right there? That's the pulmonary semilunar valve. So that's all the chambers, all the valves, and the two circulations that are necessary for us to live normal lives, right? You got the systemic and pulmonary circulation. Okay, so that's really good stuff to know. Let's look at the heart wall, for instance, all right? So in this class, we're always interested in layers of the heart. So let's consider some layers of the heart. So here is the heart. What part of the heart is this right here? Apex, and then the base is up over here. Now this diagram is a little bit more sophisticated because you see the tilt a little bit, right? As you go from base to apex, the heart moves over to the left side of your body. Okay, and this is the pulmonary artery and this is the aorta. Here are some veins that are bringing blood back to the right atrium from the systemic circulation. But let's make a cut through the heart wall. All right, so a nice transmural cut. And let's break it out and take a look at it right here. And we can see some different layers on the heart. So the heart has got cardiac muscle tissue. So this inner layer or middle layer right here is what we call the myocardium. And that's a layer. What is inside the myocardial layer? Muscle, right. So that contains cardiac muscle. Okay. And then on the inside, there is a layer as well that lines every little nook and cranny on the inside surface of the heart. We call that the endocardium. Endo meaning the inside of the heart. And the endocardium has a special function, a couple functions. If you were to touch it with your fingertip, it would be really smooth and slippery. Right? So the inner lining of the heart is really smooth and slippery because what's sliding over that surface all the time? Blood is flowing over that surface all the time. And remember, one of the functions of blood is to coagulate, to form blood clots. And would you like blood clots to form inside the heart?
No,
because then it's going to be pumped into a blood vessel. It's going to plug up a blood vessel, cause a heart attack or stroke or something. Right? So this inner surface of the heart has to be really smooth to prevent blood clots from forming inside the heart. That's an important function of the endocardium. So blood just slips over it. If it was rough or jagged, something like that, the heart would make blood clots and then that would stop your circulation. Okay. There is another layer, and that is right on the outside of the heart. This layer right here. All right, and do I see it? Okay, that is, oh yeah, here. Here it is right here. This is what we call the epicardium. Right on the surface of the heart, right here. That's the third layer on the heart. So these are the three layers. The epicardium, the middle myocardium, and the most inner layer is the endocardium. Okay. All right, and the heart itself doesn't have any bones, just like the brain doesn't have any bones. What's surrounding the brain, protecting the brain? Okay, the skull. Did we look at nervous system already in here? Yeah, I think we did. But what is surrounding the brain, keeping it in position and protecting it? The skull on the outside, but there's something in between the skull and the brain. Okay, the meninges. Okay, yeah, the meninges, the system of membranes. Well, there is a membrane around the heart as well that holds the heart in position. All right, and that is what we call the pericardium. And the pericardium is the outermost layer, is a thick fibrous layer, just like the dura mater around the brain. We call that the fibrous pericardium. And then on the inner surface of the fibrous pericardium, we've got a parietal pericardium. That's another membrane. And deep to that is a space that we call the pericardial cavity, filled with serous fluid. And then you have the layer that's right on the surface of the heart. So this surface right here is what? The visceral pericardium. We've looked at these membranes before, right? So the visceral serous membrane is right on the surface of the organ, and then there's a space, and then there's another membrane, which is what we call the parietal serous membrane. But since it's surrounding the heart, we call it the parietal pericardium. So this is the system of membranes that's holding the heart in position, the visceral pericardium, the pericardial space, and the parietal division. And then surrounding everything is the fibrous pericardium. So this space right here is filled with fluid. And normally there's not a lot of fluid in there, and that just allows the heart to move around without causing an inflammation or an irritation of the heart, that pericardial cavity. But sometimes that pericardial cavity does get infected, right? And it gets irritated and it fills up with fluid. So would you think that could be a potentially serious condition when this pericardial space right here gets filled up with fluid? Well, what's going to happen when that space gets bigger and bigger and bigger? Okay, if that space gets bigger and bigger and bigger, it's going to press on the heart. So the job of the heart is to pump blood. But before the heart can pump blood, what does it have to do? It's got to relax, right? It's got to expand, and blood has got to fill the heart before it can pump the blood out. So if this pericardial space right here fills up with a lot of fluid, it's going to compress the heart. So when the heart relaxes, blood can't get into it. And if blood can't get into the heart, what's going to happen? The heart can contract, but it's not going to pump any blood out. Well, that doesn't do anybody any good. So when somebody has fluid in this pericardial space right here, usually we just stick a needle in there and suck it out. That helps them for a little while. Okay, we just aspirate that fluid out so that their heart can fill and they get normal heart function back again. Of course, you have to be a little careful with what you're doing. Believe it or not. All right, so in terms of the pericardium, that's a sac that surrounds and suspends the heart. The visceral pericardium is what's right on the surface of the heart. Right, then you have a little pericardial fluid surrounding the pericardium. Then you have the parietal division. And then you've got this thick fibrous pericardium surrounding everything. That's really what's holding the heart in position. Okay, and then in terms of the wall, looking through the wall of the heart, right, the epicardium is really the same name for visceral pericardium. It's really the same membrane that's right on the surface of the heart. Epi means on top of. It anchors the heart, acts as a shock absorber and friction reducer. The myocardium is muscle for contraction, and that's the thickest layer. And then the endocardium is what? That smooth inner surface that allows blood to flow through the heart without causing contraction. Okay, and then we talked already about blood flow through the heart. And the heart is sort of an interesting pump because it's not like an electric motor. Remember, if you plug in an electric motor, what does it do? It just pumps all the time. It just spins. It just spins and spins and spins. And your heart isn't pumping blood all the time. Sometimes it's pumping. Sometimes it's relaxing and filling with blood. And have you ever had your blood pressure taken? Anybody ever had their blood pressure taken in here? Yeah? What do they tell you your blood pressure is? They give you a number. 110 over 64. Beautiful. It's not just one number? How many numbers? That sounds like two numbers. Why is it two numbers? Why not just one number? How come it's two numbers? Okay, because your heart is not pumping blood every second, right, or every millisecond, every small period of time. Sometimes it's contracting, other times it's relaxing, filling with blood, right? So the heart has a cycle that it has to go through, and the cycle is contraction, which is what we call systole, and then it has to relax to fill. We call that diastole. So the heart contracts and then relaxes, or goes into systole and then diastole. And if we put systole and diastole together, That is one contraction cycle. That's one. So the contraction cycle is made up of these two phases, systole and diastole. So when the heart is contracting, that's the highest pressure that's produced. When the ventricles are contracting, that produces the highest pressure. We call that the systolic pressure. And then when the heart relaxes, blood pressure starts to decrease. And at the end of diastole, the blood pressure is the lowest, and we call that the diastolic pressure. So when you get your blood pressure measured, you get two numbers, and it's always given to you systolic, which is the big number, over diastolic, that's the lowest number. So 120 over 80 is a normal blood pressure. Anything higher than that is what we call hypertension. Anything lower than that is what we call hypotension. Okay? And hypertension is deadly. You shouldn't have any hypertension whatsoever. And hypotension, on the other hand, if these numbers are lower than these right here, that's actually beneficial to you. That actually protects you from cardiovascular disease. You're less susceptible to heart attack and strokes and other kinds of vascular diseases. So the lower your blood pressure is, in our current level of understanding, the better. Except in one particular case, and that is if your blood pressure is so low that when you stand up, your blood pressure isn't enough to maintain consciousness and you pass out, then of course that's a bad thing, right? Because if you stand up and pass out, what's going to happen? Well, you're going to hit your head on the table, and then it's going to bounce off, and then you're going to hit your head on the chair, and it's going to bounce off, and then you hit your head on the floor, and that could really hurt you, right? So hypotension, or if you pass out when you're driving, right, you could kill a lot of people. So hypotension is only dangerous if you lose consciousness. But hypertension, even if it's a little bit elevated, is dangerous. Yeah. Normal heart rate is probably, I would say, maybe 72 beats per minute or 70, something like that. If you exercise a little bit, it will be lower than that. It will probably be about 70, maybe 68. If you exercise consistently, your heart rate might be well into the 60s, like 65, something like that. And that protects your heart as well. And if you exercise a lot, it might even be down in the 50s. Okay? So for a child, a little bit higher, and I don't know with age how it goes. Like a newborn's heart rate might be around 200 or something, right? Or a fetus might be 200, but I don't have a good number on the tip of my tongue. Okay, so that's heart rate as well as blood pressure. Okay. All right, so let's look at the heart some more. This might be an exam figure right here. Okay, so let me see. Let me erase some of these things right here. All right, so this is just like how I drew it on the board. All right, so this side of the heart over here is the right side, and this is the left side, and then we got the two atria, and here are the two ventricles. So how many chambers does a heart have?
Four,
right? The right atrium. Left atrium, right ventricle, left ventricle. The ventricles are separated from each other by this structure right here, which is the interventricular septum. Right? And the atria are separated from each other via the interatrial septum right here. And let's see, the left ventricle, let's look at the valves. So here is the left atrium, left ventricle. Here is an atrial ventricular valve, and in particular, which one is it? That's the mitral, right, or bicuspid valve. So here is a leaflet right here, and we see that the margins of these valves are attached to some interior structures of the heart, because the ventricles contract so forcefully that when the pressure increases in the ventricle, it would be enough to invert these valves, the atrial ventricular valves. So normally, the atrial ventricular valves point into the ventricle. When the ventricles contract, they would actually invert or flop back up into the atria. So what would happen to blood then? It could flow backwards, right? But so we want to maintain the AV valves so that they just touch each other and close. So there's got to be something holding the margins of those valves together. And we have these little tendons attached to them. Those little tendons we call chordae tendini. So these little tendons are attached to the wall of the ventricles. There are some special muscles in the walls of the ventricles that we call papillary muscles. They kind of look like little fingers, like my little fingers sticking up right there, and the chordae tendini attached to them. That prevents what? The inversion of the valve cusps so that the valves work properly. So mitral valve prolapse, yeah, typically, sometimes it's not really clinically important, but prolapse is when the valve inverts a little bit. I mean, if there is a significant amount of leak, so a valve can prolapse a little bit, but if it doesn't leak, then it doesn't produce any kind of clinical symptoms at all. I'm sorry? It could be just due to a congenital anatomical variation in the valve itself. Or it could be maybe due to some damage to the papillary muscles, or maybe a viral infection to the chordae tendini or something. But it could just be an inherited condition. And in most cases, I think it's just an inherited condition, which is completely benign, which really doesn't affect the individual whatsoever. Okay, but if there is leak from the ventricle back into the atrium here, then that valve has to be repaired. And if it's really bad and can't be repaired, it's got to be replaced. All right, and so that's a job of a cardiologist to figure out when you have to do something and if you have to do something and when. Okay, and it's sort of interesting, I suppose, because we can do different things with that valve. If it has to be replaced, it can be replaced with a prosthetic valve. That means somebody in a little garage someplace is making one out of plastic and metal parts. Okay. Or you could get, that's a prosthetic valve. Or maybe you could get a valve from a pig. Pig valves, pig hearts are very similar to human hearts. They match up properly, and we can take a little pig valve out and plop it in somebody. All right. That works for a while, but if you're going to live 50 years, you might have to get it replaced again in your lifetime. Or we can actually get a valve from a cadaver, somebody that's died, who has your same body shape. Take that valve out and put it in somebody else. All right, and that lasts a fairly long time. It's a better match. But whenever you get a human tissue, whenever you transplant human tissue from one person to another, what might be some consequences to that? Infection. Well, rejection is one, okay? But you're going to reject a pig valve just like a human valve. But if you're getting human tissue, you have to be worried about infection. For instance, if they check that person for HIV, right? And the test was a false negative, well, then you come down with HIV later. So there are no tests that are perfectly 100% accurate all the time. I mean, the rates are really low, but those are some of the things you consider. All right? And so you might say, well, I don't want to get an infection. How about just get a prosthetic valve? Because prosthetic valves are just made by some guy in a garage somewhere. It doesn't contain HIV, right? But what's the downside to a prosthetic valve? It's just a mechanical device. Yeah, you know, it might not last that long. Okay. The problem with a prosthetic valve, since it's mechanical, it's going to have a tendency to produce blood clots. And so when you have that, then you also, if you're prone to producing blood clots, you have to be on anticoagulation therapy, like Coumadin, for the rest of your life. So no matter what you choose, it's not always 100% given that you might not have problems later. All right, so you got these chordae tendini, these papillary muscles for both atrioventricular valves. But now notice this valve right here between the left ventricle and the aorta doesn't have chordae tendini. This is a semilunar valve. Semilunar valves don't have papillary muscles or chordae tendini. Just by their shape, they form a nice perfect valve. So they open up and then close, open up and close all the time. So their shape is a lot different. All right, so what else do we see on this diagram? This is an exam figure. All right, so I do want you to know the names of the vessels coming off the heart. All right, so this is the base of the heart. There are great vessels coming off the base of the heart. And let's start over here with the right atrium. So blood is coming in these vessels right here. So what kind of vessel is this, artery or vein? These are veins. These are huge veins. They're cavernous veins, and so these are given the name vena cava. Vena cava just means big, huge vein, bringing blood back from the systemic circulation. Here is a superior one, and here is an inferior one. So you got the superior vena cava, inferior vena cava. Here's the orifice to the superior. Here's the orifice to the inferior vena cava. All right, blood goes from the right atrium to right ventricle. The right ventricle pumps blood to the lungs via the pulmonary artery. And it's deoxygenated blood, but it's still an artery nonetheless. It goes to the lungs, and it comes back from the lungs. How does blood come back from the lungs? If this is a pulmonary artery, it comes back from the lungs via the pulmonary veins. Now it's oxygenated, that's why it's red colored. So here are some pulmonary veins and some over here. You've got two from the left side, two from the right side, bringing blood back to the left atrium. And it goes from left atrium into left ventricle past the bicuspid valve. Left atrium pumps blood past the aortic semilunar valve into the aorta right here. So here is the ascending aorta, the arch of the aorta, and then later on we're going to look at the descending aorta. Now the exam figure, I want you to modify this one a little bit because it's missing something. It's missing three vessels that I want you to start becoming familiar with already. These branches coming off the arch of the aorta, I want you to know. Okay? So these over here are going to take blood to everything above the level of your heart. So your level of your heart is here. What do you have above that? You got your arms? And what else? You got your head. Okay, so you got blood vessels taking blood to your arms and to your head. This one over here on the right side is going to take blood to what side of your body? The right or the left? Yeah, it's going to take blood to the right side of your body. So it's going to take blood to the right side of your head and your right arm. So the vessel that does that is what we call the brachio. Brachio means what? Arm. Cephalic. And what does cephalic mean? It means head. So brachiocephalic. And that's an artery. Why is that an artery? It's taking blood away from the heart. Okay? So this is the brachiocephalic. And notice that we don't have a lot of symmetry over here. You only have one brachiocephalic. So guess what? If you only have one, you don't have to say right or left, right? So we don't say right brachiocephalic or left because there is no such thing. You only got one of them. But now these two right here do the job of the brachiocephalic. They're going to take blood to your head and to your arm, but to what side of your body? Your left side, because this is the left ventricle right over here. So these are going to take blood to your left arm and the left side of your head. The first one right here is going to take blood to the head. So this is what we call the left, and I'll just abbreviate it, common carotid. Left common carotid, and is that an artery or a vein? Artery, right? So A-R-T. And a carotid artery is going to take blood to your head. Is that, you think that's an important artery? Yeah, it's got to be one of the most important arteries in your body because it's feeding blood to your brain, right? And you don't want to lose consciousness for even a second. All right, so here is the left common carotid, and this one over here, is this a left or a right? It's still a left. It's still on the left side, so I'm going to put left, and it's going to take blood to your arm, and it's going to go underneath the clavicle. Can you remember where your clavicle is? That's your, what's a common name for clavicle? Collarbone. Yeah, it's going to go underneath your collarbone. Thank you, I forgot. That's the clavicle, your collarbone right there. So this, since it's underneath the clavicle, we call this the left subclavian. And is that an artery or a vein? It's an artery. Left subclavian artery. All right, so I want you to know those three names too, because you're going to have to know it sooner or later. All right, so this is a good diagram where you can see it really easily. All right, so I think we covered everything on this diagram. So that's good. All right, so next time we're going to have a quiz at the end of class, and we're going to start with the conduction system right here next time. But you know what? I might have a question on the quiz with conduction system. So make sure you review your student study guide for the quiz coming up. Okay. Claudia, I'll be right down. Hi.
Uh-oh.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
All right. I've got a name on it. Very good. Okay. Thank you. Hi. Yeah.
You know how you posted the exam on Blackboard? Is that the right grade after you found out that we didn't have that speaker?
Yeah.
That's correct.
It's a corrected grade.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. What did you get on it?
76.
Oh, it's really close to a B. Okay. You know, I have an old one with me which doesn't have figures on it. Yeah,
okay,
right here.
Fine.
Good.
You weren't looking when I had a question.
Oh.
How come there's only one for the right side, but there's two separate ones for the left?
Because this one right here, the brachiocephalic,
uh-huh,
bifurcates very early into a common carotid and a subclavian. Okay, so this one is doing the job of both of these. So, like, right about here, it's going to bifurcate.
Oh, it's just not showing it.
But now, the question is, why is there asymmetry there?
Yeah.
Why, through evolution? Well, you know, there's always been a big change in heart architecture. There's some animals that only have three chambers. Okay, so things have just changed through evolution.
So it does split into
it
two.
It does split into a common carotid and a subclavian.
Why isn't there two different names then for the brachiocephalic if it's up here? How do you tell the difference when you get up here?
There's only one brachiocephalic, and right about here, then you have two blood vessels.
What are those?
Common carotid, subclavian.
Just the same thing, but just right side.
Yeah, and you know, you might be able to find some people where these are almost fused together, and almost like the brachiocephalic.
Oh.
Yeah. It's kind of funny that way.
Do you have the makeup quiz, I think, for the quiz number? What is it? Or the exam two? Did you?